Is the Fed broke? The colloquial Fed refers to the Consolidated Federal Reserve System, consisting of 12 separate regional Federal Reserve banks, each owned by private banks in its region. By broke, we mean insolvent, an excess of liabilities over assets, leaving a negative net worth. Definitions aside, the question remains, is the Fed broke? I've had occasion to discuss that question with members of the Fed's Board of Governors, regional Federal Reserve Bank presidents, senior Fed staffers, and presidential candidates, among others. The answers I received were no, yes, maybe, and it doesn't matter. Each of those answers reveals a troubling aspect of the Federal Reserve. Let's look at those answers in turn and what the people providing them actually meant. At a superficial level, the Fed is not insolvent. A glance at the Fed's balance sheet at the time of this writing shows total assets of approximately $4.49 trillion, total liabilities of approximately $4.45 trillion, and total capital, assets minus liabilities, of approximately $40 billion. Admittedly, the Fed is highly leveraged, about 114 to 1. Of course, leverage amplifies the impact of gain or loss on the capital account. It would only take a 1% loss on the Fed's assets to completely wipe out its capital. In normal stock and bond markets, 1% declines happen all the time. The Fed's balance sheet is highly leveraged and hanging by a thread, yet not technically insolvent. This brings us to the concept of mark-to-market. As the name implies, marking-to-market means taking each asset and repricing it to the current market price using the best available information. Hedge funds and broker-dealers do this every day, although the results are reported only periodically. Banks also use mark-to-market with part of their balance sheets. Some assets are mark-to-market, some not, depending on whether the assets are held for trading or long-term investments. The Fed does not use mark-to-market accounting. What if it did? Would that make it insolvent? The answer requires a deeper dive into the details of the Fed's balance sheet. Short-term instruments such as 90-day Treasury bills hardly vary in price at all. They are not volatile enough to have a major impact on Fed solvency, even if marked to market. This is not true of 10-year notes and 30-year bonds. Both instruments are highly volatile. In fact, the volatility, what is technically called duration, increases at lower levels of interest rates. Of course, rates have been near all-time lows for the past 6 years. So that makes these instruments especially vulnerable to large swings in market value. The Fed balance sheet lumps, quote, U.S. Treasury securities, notes and bonds nominal, close quote, into a single category and shows holdings of approximately $2.3 trillion as of now. The Fed then breaks those holdings down by regional reserve bank. Of the $2.3 trillion held by the system, $1.48 trillion are held on the books of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That makes sense because the New York Fed runs open market operations for the entire system and is the principal buyer of Treasury debt under the various quantitative easing programs known as QE. In turn, the New York Fed provides a detailed list of all Treasury securities owned under its System Open Market Account, SOMA. Using this detailed information on the securities, a daily price ticker, and some conventional bond math, it is possible to mark this portion of the Fed's balance sheet to market. The New York Fed data shows the Fed was making massive purchases of highly volatile 10-year notes during the height of QE2 and QE3. For QE2, these purchases were made from November 2010 to June 2011. For QE3, the purchase period was September 2012 to October 2014. Using this data alone, the Fed was technically insolvent on a mark-to-market basis at certain times from June to December 2013. In that period, the 10-year note had a yield to maturity of about 3%. Most of the Fed's 10-year note purchases were at yields of 1.5% to 2.5%. That backup in yields from the 1.5% level to the 3% level produced massive mark-to-market losses on that portion of the Fed's portfolio, more than enough to wipe out the slender $60 billion capital cushion at that time.